whomever, you know, it'd be a scientist coming in or someone who wanted to have a project to be going. And Max would sit there and tell them all sorts of stories and about natives doing this and natives doing that, trying to crank into their minds questions, you know, make them think of things that they had to ask about. And so he really got to the point he had a routine of stories that he went through. It was horrible. And of course, in those days, there was nothing in the village, except in the spring you might have a nullicaduck or a dance or something. And so there was nothing to do with your guests in the village. So we would either take them to the house for drinks and dinner, or drinks and then go to the mess hall for dinner. And of course, Max would be tired. In those days, we used to get 4 or 5 hours sleep at night. And he'd have 2 drinks and he'd be telling us stories. And Mary Lou and I would be sitting there off in the corner and she'd go, "Number 32." And we'd laugh. We'd laugh. We were just nasty. I mean, but he never even noticed. He lived in his own little world. But, you know, Max can tell you a story about Aunt Minnie's hangnail and it'll take 3 days to get through it. But believe me, I don't ever denigrate what the man has got to tell you. His mind is unbelievable. He still has a tremendous memory for events and things and people and genealogy and kids and much better than I'll ever hope to be.
Yeah, I met one of his daughters. She came,
Paula.
Paula.
She's the one that loves Barrow.
She was there last Naukatuck.
Yeah. She and I think Kelly was there too. Her sister-in-law, who's married to her younger brother. Yeah, Kelly.
I couldn't remember her name.
Yeah, Kelly's a speech therapist at Providence Hospital.
Okay.
Stroke people.
And when I met Paul, I was like, "Oh, I'd love to talk to your dad." You know, I've been thinking, talking to him. Well, I've been trying to get him to record for years.
And in fact, I told Paul a couple of times, and of course, we never get around to it. She has got some records that when she's here, she turns on her machine. You know, and sits around and asks questions. She loves Barrow. Barrow to her, well, she grew up there.
Yeah.
So she has a lot of good memories of Barrow. My oldest daughter does too. She really has good memories of Barrow. She and Linda Brewer, that's Paula's oldest sister, literally were like sisters. They were the same age. You know, in fact, for years they talked Eskimo because we couldn't understand them and they couldn't understand each other. You know, so they would talk Eskimo in front of us so we couldn't understand them. Yeah. But still, occasionally someone will come through town and call in, and she can still handle a little Eskimo. I don't know how much, but she talks on the phone occasionally in Eskimo, so, which I don't hear anymore now that she doesn't live here.
The other thing I'm wondering back to Harry is, you know, here I'm doing this life story sort of thing of him. And just what other people who knew him think is important about his life.
About his life.
About him or about his life that, so for people who don't know him, if they were to read this, that they'd get out of it. Or why is it important that I do this?
Well, I see what you're saying. Yeah, why is it? Well, it's the same. This is the same thing as what Sadie did. Sadie met, she bridged first the white man's law and the Eskimo's way of doing business. And Harry did the same thing, maybe not on something you can quickly identify, like Sadie was the magistrate, you know, and all those things. But he managed to teach you things about the Eskimo people and the Arctic slope, you know, the natural bits of things, the way foxes could avoid a trap if you weren't careful, and all these little tidbits of stories he used to tell. He could teach you things, and you never felt like you were being lectured to. It was always that, how do I say it? Harry was one of these strong people that you've met them in your life. They just are attractive because they are so self-confident in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're not cocky. They just are sure of their inner selves. And Harry was one of those solid people. he had probably 1,000 friends. I can't think of anyone in Beryl. And Beryl used to be pretty torn up in rivalries, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The Browers and the Kilbears and God, you name them all, or Hobsons. The Hobsons and the Browers had the longest running feud going. But Harry was loved by everybody because he never asked anything of anybody. And he had this way of telling you things with that little twinkle in his eye and teasing you about him as he did it, you know, that. And it's funny that I cannot remember specifics. I can just remember the way he looked, the way he handled himself. You know, something else that's very interesting, I was thinking of this the other day. Harry was the youngest boy of the Browers. Mary was the youngest girl. And yet I cannot remember seeing Harry and Tommy together unless it was like a meeting or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they ever socialized.
Do you remember if Harry ever socialized with the others, any of the others?
I saw him with Mary. And, I can't think of his name. The one next to Tommy.
David.
Used to see him with David a lot. And Sadie. He and Sadie would tease all the time, you know. But if Tommy and Harry would come to a meeting, they'd often sit on opposite sides. I just didn't think about that until recently. I think he was closer to the Hobsons than he was to Tommy. Well, Tommy, you know, he played the patriarch. He pulled back a lot in many ways. And I don't know if it was the responsibility of the money or what, because...
I know Harry told me a few things, and then when I talked to Sadie in January, I kind of asked some of how the siblings got along, and there were problems with Tom, like once their dad died,
mm-hmm.
and Tommy taking over. And,
yeah, this was it was a big problem because old man Brower really turned it all over to Tommy.
Or Tommy thought he turned it all over to him.
Well, the parts of the will that I saw he did, and with the promise that Tommy would always look out for everything. But, you know, the property in California, the boats, the business, everything was in Tommy's name.
Yeah.
And so there was no doubt that he turned it over to Tommy.
And with Sadie, and Harry talked about it too, is the big property in Barrow.
And yeah.
And with the road going through it, it was a big fight.
Yeah, that I don't remember why, what the deal was then, but I do remember there was a big fight over that road. And
yeah.
I don't understand why Tommy would have fought it. Or if Tommy wanted the road and they didn't, maybe it was that way.
From what Sadie said and what I remember from Harry, they went to court.
I didn't hear they actually went to court over.
Well, I think it was, I don't know, I think from the way Sadie described it, it was court, and that Tommy had tried to make it that the whole thing was his property.
Yeah,
sharing it with
that's right. The property, there was something different. The businesses were his, but the property, yeah, there was definitely, in fact, it may have even been divvied up.
It has been now.
Yeah, but even in those days, I think it was in everybody's name. That's right.
It was like all the kids were supposed to get
yes.
some, and then
yes.
Tommy like made this deal with the borough for the road.
Oh, that's probably
what it
was.
His, or yes. something like that. And they,
yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. Because Tommy really, as he got older, too, was a lot more difficult to deal with.
Yeah, and Sadie told a story about Harry in court getting very mad with Tommy and Tommy's lawyer.
Tommy was... I think you're right. I think the property was in everybody's name. Or it specifically said that he was to divide the property among his siblings. You know, and it was never done. That's probably the way it was, because there was a thing about division. I do remember that.
You saw a copy of your dad's will?
Not a copy. All I saw were snippets of, like, letters that his father gave to Tommy.
Huh.
And I have no idea where that is now.
But they were in Tommy's possession.
Yes, they were. They were at that time in Tommy's.
So this kid's hot one.
I don't know. Wouldn't surprise me if they're not around anymore. See, I used to... Tommy was a funny guy. I liked Tommy. Tommy was a good friend. Like I said, we served Max Brewer, this banker, myself, and Tommy. We rotated the Chamber of Commerce presidency forever. And Tommy and I used to sit in the back of the room when the others were doing their thing, and Tommy would sit there and make wise cracks, and jokes. He was a lot of fun guy, but he was funny when it came to the family. And I think it was because the battles first started when David was postmaster. Did you hear about this?
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of a sad commentary, because it's really the white man's way coming against the Eskimo way. David was postmaster, and all of his friends, everybody, was getting CODs, and David was letting them take them without paying for them.
Oops.
And it got really to the point that, they were thousands of dollars in the hole. And Tommy would not pay it. And David went to jail.
Mm-hmm. And this is when the post office was at their store still?
No, I don't remember. No, I think it wasn't. This was the late 50s.
Okay.
So I think it was gone by then. I really don't know. It was before I got to Barrow. But David went to jail over this because, it's a federal law. He couldn't pay the money, so he had to. It wasn't real long. It was like 6 months or so. But the interesting part of it was when he came back, it was like he went to town yesterday and came back today. And Tommy was the one who was shunned. Because Tommy did not stick by his friend.
Yeah.
So it was a very... And that's really when all this started. When Tommy became very defensive over the money, and things. And Tommy had money, let me tell you. Lots of money. Last time that Cape Smyth Whaling and Trading was listed in Dun & Bradstreet, it was like $13 million. And that's been 15 years ago since it's been listed. I don't know what it is. Have I any idea now? But that was Whaling and Trading. Now there's Cape Smyth Air something, And that had no connection at that time. But that was a private investment of Tommy's.
Uh-huh.
That was private money he put in Cape Smyth Air. And Cape Smyth Whaling and Trading was the old family.
Right.
Old. He sold something like 12 blocks in Hollywood, one corner of which was Hollywood Vine. Sold it in the 50s.
They owned part of Hollywood?
Yeah, his father bought land that was way outside of L.A. at one time. And Tommy sold it off in the 50s. Because I can remember him saying, like, in 68 or 69, he'd held on to it for 5 more years and he could have got 10 times as much money. And then, it's really Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's that section of L.A. The old man had lots of investments all over the place. That's where those millions came from. They weren't all, Fox and Whalebone, were a great part of it, but... Whalebone is there's an interesting story that someone should talk about. The Whaling. Do you know John Bockstas?
I have not ever met him, but I know his name.
Yeah. Have you read his book?
Yes.
Well, Whalebone really wasn't replaced by plastic. Lots of people think that the Whalebone corset stays went the way because plastic took their way. Well, Whalebone was used to make buggy whips.
Uh-huh.
And what really replaced it was turkey feathers. They would sew the turkey feathers into linen and then roll it up and make a whip. And that's what they were making the stays out of, too, were turkey feathers, the quills. So actually, they found this was cheaper and quicker, and they had an unending supply of turkey feathers. And, you know, everybody says that plastic replaced the whalebone, but it wasn't. It was turkey feathers. Turkey feathers were replaced by plastic. Turkey quills, I should say. They had the whole feather, you know. But, Interesting. And you know who told me that? Interesting enough, Tommy Brown.
Yeah, I never knew. I mean, I knew Tommy just kind of in passing at the store when I first got to Barrow. He'd still be there and he'd stop and chat and tell some of his stories, but that was all. I never really got to know.
Yeah, Tommy was. You know, another person that I really like to see you do some oral history on is Kenny Tulak.
Yeah, sure.
In fact, let me tell you a story. All three. I had gone over to see Harry. And Tommy's son-in-law, Grant
Thompson.
I had seen Grant earlier that day and asked how Tommy was doing, and he said, "Yeah, he's feeling pretty bad." And this was at the tail end. I think this was the spring before he died. I happened to be up for some reason early. And I said, "Well, if you hear from the house and there's a, you know, he's up and around, I'd like to go see him." So I went, then left and went to see Harry. And I was at Harry's house for about an hour when Kenny came up. And he says, "Come on, we'll go see Tommy." So I really don't know how that all came about, but Harry, Kenny, and Grant must have talked. And we went up to see Tommy, up to the house. I think it was his daughter. Kate was gone by then. It was his daughter who was taking care of him. She had him up and dressed and on the couch. And we went in to talk. And I remember helping Tommy sit up. He couldn't seem to get up. He was lying on the couch by himself. Did quite well once he was up. And then he and Kenny started an Eskimo. Tommy thought I understood Eskimo totally, because I used to understand that man quite well.
Uh-huh.
You know, half of his jokes were Eskimo, and so they were just into Eskimo totally. And I was having trouble following, but I was getting it. And Tommy was definitely talking about dying. There was just no doubt about it. You know, I could understand that much. And he asked Kenny, as a elder of the church, pray for him. And I'll never forget this, because I really felt proud of this. Kenny never translated. He just reached over to me. We were sitting like this, Tommy on the couch. No, Kenny was on the end of the couch, and I was on a chair over there. He just reached over for my hand. I grabbed Kenny's hand, got on my knees, and grabbed Tommy's hand. And then they prayed for about 10 minutes. And the last I saw Tommy Brown, he was sitting there crying with tears running down his face. I'll never forget as long as I can. And then he died 2-3 weeks later. So. But that was so... I really think that there was a lot of Kenny accepting Tommy again. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because Tommy was on the outs with a lot of the village for a long time. It was very... You don't really know what's going through their minds, or that you feel these things. It was really very interesting. But Tommy was a good friend. I really liked Tommy, but a lot of people didn't.
Yeah. I know that Harry told me that he made amends with Tommy before he
did. That's good. That's very good. I'll tell you a cute story about Kate Brower. Have you ever been in the Brower house there?
No, not that big house.
No. Yeah, the big house there? No. It's been changed so many times, it's probably nowhere near the same anyway. They used to remodel it every other year. I had the guy who was secretary of the Explorers Club, and I can't remember what his name was, but he was retiring, and as a gift to him, they gave him a trip to Alaska, because he had been secretary for 1,000 years or something like that. And the one thing he wanted to do while he was in Barrow was meet Tommy Brower, who had been a member of the Explorers Club since his father joined. You know. So I called Tommy, and we made arrangements and went over to... it was dark. You know, it's like November. It's very dark. Lots of snow. And we drove over to Tommy's house and went in. And I'll never forget this, because you walked into this big room, and that really... That hadn't changed much the last time I was in there. The kitchen was on one side. It was just a huge room attached up to it. And there was a big seal stretched out across the counter, you know, dripping on the floor. And then a very beautiful island fireplace in the middle of the floor on the other side. And we all curled up around the fireplace to have tea. This big picture window that looked out over the ocean, you know, sitting there. And he's, I don't remember what's going on, but right in the middle of this, in the dark, comes the Ski-Doo right, well, looks like it's coming right through the window. Stops it, throws snow all over the window, and then you hear this stop, stop, stop out on the porch coming in. And in comes Kate, and I'll never forget this, hoarfrost, you know, frozen all over everything. She goes, Ava, I'm calling. I thought this guy from the Explorers Club would die. Oh, that was cute.
Yeah, see, I never met her either.
Oh, no, she was a delight. Very delightful person. Yeah, and I think she could be snippy, but I think she was defending Tommy when this happened. You could see, you know, the family problems. Mm-hmm. But I'm convinced it goes back to that business with David and the post office.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Harry's talked about going on icebreakers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he went out for the Arliss one. He went out to help put the buildings together, wrote out on the icebreaker.
Oh, okay.
They established it.
So you know what?
That would have been.
Where the icebreakers went and what he did.
Okay, well, definitely was on the Burton Island when they went out to establish the Arliss one. Yeah, that was 1960. They established that. They went out in August and came back in late September. I think they spent 3 weeks on the breaker.
So they took all the buildings out?
Yeah, and offloaded them onto the ice.
Was Arliss 1?
Arliss 1. Arctic Research Laboratory Ice Station Number 1, Arliss 1. Yeah. Fall of 1960. I was just coming on board. Those are the build. He went out to put the buildings together that he had built that summer.
Okay.
Yeah, because they prefabbed them, you know.
Okay. Did he go on icebreakers just to go cruise around the Arctic? Or
no, he usually had a job or something to do. I don't recall him ever going for science.
I don't know if he went to...
Oh, I think he did. I think he went out with Poulter once on an icebreaker when he was working with Tom Poulter, who was doing underwater recording of seals and stuff.
Stanford.
Yes. Good, you know them all. That reminds me. If I've got it here, I don't know where the heck it is. Maybe I don't have it. Here. This is one of my favorite.
Wow.
Piece of granite. Take it off the top.
Yeah. Wow.
Granite marble that Tom Poulter brought me. He made that marble from a piece of granite from the Antarctic. He says, you got to take one from the Antarctic and bring it to the Arctic.
Wow, I didn't know they had granite like that in the Antarctic. Yeah, actually, did he run a lab for, like, with seals and stuff down in California?
Santa Ana, on the island of Santa Ana.
No, I was going to say it's like by Stanford someplace.
It was, well, he was at Stanford, but the actual research part of it, where they had seals and all this business, was Santa Ana Island. Well, they had a lab right there at Stanford, too.
Because I remember as a kid, I grew up by Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, we went someplace nearby and went to this lab where they had seals and stuff. And I think it was...
Oh,
his.
Yeah. That's right. He just had... But he had, like, two seals or something that they would bring in to run experiments with the acoustics in the pools.
Okay.
But the big lab where they had all the animals and everything was out there, offshore.
Also, part of the reason the names are familiar is because I've been looking at all the stuff in the archives, and the names are familiar. And that one, I've been talking to my parents about all this stuff, and they said, oh, you know, you remember that place we went, blah, blah, blah. And I haven't met...
Poulter, let's see. He was also one of the involved in the invention of the ski.
Really?
He gave me a picture, and it should be in the lab archives. I don't know if I made copies of that one or not. of a ski-doo that he and somebody else was working on in New York in the 20s, late 20s, early 30s. And you remember the Admiral Byrd Antarctic Mobile?
No.
Huge tires, huge things. This big truck-like thing they were going to live in and drive in across Antarctica. It was so big you could put an airplane, a pontoon plane on it, type of thing, you know, and they were going to put it off on skis and fly off the snow and stuff. I have pictures. There was an article on that not too long ago. When they were driving it, it was built in Indiana, and they drove it to New York and put it on a boat over there or something. Maybe it was an article of it crossing the lower 48. That was, Tom Poulter was on that expedition also.
Interesting.
He was a character. Really great guy. Yeah.
So, then did Harry build Peter's Lake Station? He talked about being up at Peter's Lake.
I think he did.
So did he also go up there with scientists?
I only think of about once he went there with scientists. Because he was... See, Harry, he went there one summer to build the generator shack. And I, yes, because Pappy Talbert was the shop foreman in those days. That was built, in the summer. They flew the materials in the spring of 60. It was built in the summer of 60. That was the first year, so I'm pretty vague on this when I just got there. But you're right, because when we... Or was that 61? No, it's got to be 61. We flew out in the spring. No, they built it in 60. And we tried to resupply it with a DC-3 in 61, in the spring of 61, landing on the lake with kicking off fuel drums and stuff. Because my daughter was on board. She was 4 and a half at the time. I can still see her sitting on Otto Geist's lap. In fact, somewhere in the basement, we have a sealskin pillow that Otto was going to make for Lynn. He was just nuts about Lynn. And he was writing to me about the lady to do it and all this from Germany when he died over in Germany. And so I went ahead and had the pillow made for Lynn, as if it was from Otto, because it never been done. Somewhere down there, it was his idea. It had originally had a face like he wanted it to be. A pillow about this big to sit on with a seal's face on one end of it. We finally took the face off, but it was ridiculous. We just made a pillow out of it. Yeah. God, this group all, well, we spent many years up there, so we got lots of memory there.
Yeah. Yeah, so I know it's hard to remember the most specific episodes, but yeah, just like things you did with Harry or funny stories about him or what other scientists thought about him when he actually went on.
I do remember that G. Edgar Folk, Ed Folk, Ed and Mary Folk thought the world of Harry. If they had to do an operation on the animals, they wanted Pete and Harry as helpers. And I think they were there for a couple of the bear, they did a couple of the grizzly bear operations. We used implant monitors and stuff for heart rate, temperature, blood temperature, high pressure. I'm trying to remember, was Harry working with Max Britton in those days? Back in the late 50s? In Volschlag Schlue?
What's that?
It's an area out of the tundra. Do you go out the Gaspel Road? Have you ever been out the Gaspel Road? Do you remember, has anyone ever pointed out as you're going out before you get to Footprint Lake? On the left-hand side, there's a whole bunch of old, used to be an antenna field in there. There's stumps still in the ground, I think. Well, on the right-hand side, there's a cutoff, a short road. If you go out in the summer, you can see it. It's never plowed in the winter.
That's where IBP was, but that stub road points directly back along Wolschlag Slough. And in fact, if you walk up that little creek arrangement, where Footprint
Yeah,
drains.
there's that big creek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. There's a waterfall there.
Yeah.
And Barrow kids used to swim there at that waterfall.
Uh-huh.
That's where Tommy Brouwer proposed to Kate.
Wow.
Right at that waterfall. Yeah.
How romantic.
Yes. And it tickled the hell out of me because I said, Tommy, there was no real waterfall there then. They had just drained Footprint. There wasn't that much of a drop yet. It's a big one for us. I can still see the look on his face. Yeah. And Kate made a big deal out of it too. So. Oh dear. Didn't mean to go on this long.
Oh no, well, it's fine with me.
It's really a changed village now. It's when I first went to Barrow, there were 11 white people, I think it was 11 or 12 at the school, 6 at the hospital, and 6 at the weather. Bobby Fischer and Lloyd Jones, I think, were the only white men living in the village. They had native wives. I ran into Lloyd Jones about 4 years ago in Costco down here. And he was on his way back to Barrow. They lived in Seattle. It's the last time I'd seen him. And Georgiana, I don't know if you know her, Georgiana Fisher, that was Bobby's
oh,
wife.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Well, she's up there still.
Yeah.
Going strong. The Brewers, Max was very close to Bobby before I ever even came on board. Bobby was another wonderful guy. And the Brewers really sort of a drop. You know, when Bobby died in 68, he was killed in that crash. They sort of adopted them. Fisher kids, making sure they had Christmas presents every year and this sort of thing. Oh, there was another, two more white people on the bill. Oh, God. Oh, dear. Gladys and Lou Fravel ran the store Gladys Originals. They were the other white. In fact, Gladys shows you how the world has changed. Don't mean to embarrass you, but she used to crochet Peter Parkas. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
Uh-huh.
Well, they were in the shape of a penis, you know, type thing. And it was a big joke, and all the guys from camp would want to buy one and take them out and show them to people. I had one somewhere buried in the basement. This was Gladys' original. It was a Peter Berg. Oh, those crazy people. Well, they were all half crazy. Gladys and Lou was killed in a fire, and they were almost killed in the old building, yeah. He went back in to the burning Quonset thinking Gladys and the kids were in, and they had gotten out the back, and he never made it out.
Their store?
Yeah, they lived in the back of their store. It was all in one building. And he came back. They were still in the back sleeping in the store. It was on fire. He dashed in. And the back was all covered with snow. And Gladys just bulldozed their way out and got the kids out. And she got out. And he died. And he was overcome with smoke. And the Brewers again picked up Gladys and all her kids, took them back home. And they lived with them at the house there in the camp. About 2 weeks, you know, until Lou was buried and Gladys could get her act together. And then they finally got another place to live in the village. And then Gladys and Jonesy, Lloyd Jones. Oh, it's who else? There were two or three others, built a huge building, wooden building, where the court is now. Or they were building it, I should say. They had a store in that. They were going to put a roller rink in it. They had meeting rooms and a hotel on the second floor. Some of the hotel was built, finished, because they had people staying there. When it caught fire and the whole thing burned.
Mm-hmm.
And this was less than a year after Lou died. It was the following winter. And Gladys just packed up and left. That was the end of that. I have pictures of that fire somewhere. Because it was a horrible fire. It was a totally wood building. And they had, of course, nothing in there for fire protection at all. And the campfire department, everybody was there with whatever they had. I can still see the campfire department is pouring water on the side of this wooden building. And you can see in through the window areas. It's just an inferno. And the water is freezing on the outside of the wood, causing a big sheet of ice while it's burning up on the inside. Yeah, it's just, and it, there was nothing left, absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
But Gladys and the kids got out. They lived there, too, on the second or third floor of the building. And that, but that was too much for Gladys, too much, you know, in 1 year, too far. So she and the kids moved back to Wisconsin. I have Mary Lou still hears from the kids. One or two of the kids still write to her, but I haven't heard from her in a long time. Gladys has been, she died on the operating table about 10 years ago. God, I'd forgotten all about Gladys's Originals. That was a store, I don't think it was as big as this room. And it had everything. I mean, of course, it had Quonset Hut walls.
Right.
Stuff was just hanging. It was just unbelievable. We used to love to go. The kids loved to go here because they had comic books. So I don't know how they ever made money at it because they didn't sell anything worth having. It was about the cheapest, crappiest tourist joint I'd ever seen. And barrel of all. And they had no tourists in those days. You know, this was... Well, they had tourists, but yeah, very little, really. In fact, Mary Lou tells the story about the gal who, the first summer that Ween brought tourists up there, must have been about 58. Was Mary Lou there? Yeah, 56, maybe. And they'd land out at the camp, of course, and they'd bring them into town, drive around, then take them back out, fly them out, you know. Or if they stayed at the Top of the World, which was unbelievable in those days. If you turned around fast, you put your elbow through the plywood wall.
Oh,
I mean, it was, the rooms were about that wide, you know, type of thing. But this gal was from South Carolina. And I can't remember what her name was, but she goes out there and the plane lands and she's got this parka on. And, welcome to Palm Barrel, y'all. Must have been a horrible shock for those poor tourists. Oh, come to think of it, you ought to dig out Os Matsutani if you ever get a chance. Have you ever heard of him?
I have heard of him for sure.
Yeah. Good or bad, I'm curious, because Os was up there for a long time.
Good.
Mostly good, yeah, because Os, I think.
How do you spell it, Os?
O-S. Os comes from the village where his parents are from in Japan. They hunt the Sai whale. And when I retired as director, Os gave me this whale that comes from that village, yeah.
Yeah, but his village, which I'm ashamed to say I don't remember, he said it, of course, but...
He's here in town.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he used to be out at the hospital, but he's in private practice last I saw.
I
thought
he must be old.
Os is younger than I am, quite a bit.
He must have been really young when he was
there. Yeah, brand new out of school, or cracking out of school on an internship. He used to run around bare with a camera around his shoulder, with no camera in it, you know, because he looked Eskimo, the Oriental features and everything. And the tourists would whip out a camera, and he'd dig in and whip out a camera, snap it back. That was typical Os, yeah.
Yeah, I heard him talk about why he's a... Everybody talks about how he could speak in Yupia.
Yes, he really applied himself. And I'm ashamed to say that I didn't. I'd say 10 phrases, maybe that's all. But he did very well, very, very well. He felt he couldn't talk to the older folks, which he was dealing with, unless he learned it.
I mean, he was a doctor.
Yes.
Did you ever go out hunting or trapping with Harry?
No. In fact, I'm trying to think, other than his boys, very few people that I can think of. I never really went out hunting with anybody, not even Kenny. I once went out on the ice, not to go hunting with Pete, but just to go on the ice. Mm-hmm. Hell, we never had the times in those days. I don't recall Harry going hunting much with anybody, except his kids. That's it. You know, that's a good point, because I've just never thought of it before. Yeah.
I know in earlier days, he went with, you know, Sam Hobson and Joe Amia.
When they used to go to put the buildings out, they always insisted Joe Agiak go, too. And Harry would go on those, too. I'd forgotten about that.
Who insisted Joe go?
Kenny. Kenny and Harry together. Maybe. Yeah. Kenny was the one who ran the equipment. Harry was the one in charge of putting the buildings up. So
okay.
I'd forgotten that they always wanted Joe there. So that would make sense because they always were hunting caribou when they came back, you know. That makes a lot more sense. Yeah.
I know that when, because Mariah is significantly older than Harry, and that when she married Joe, Harry was still like a late teenager, maybe.
Yeah.
And so he would go out hunting.
I don't
with Joe.
Think I'd say significantly. I don't think it's more like 7 or 8 years.
Enough years that.
Oh, yeah, but the girl's married very young, you know, and he was 17 or 18, she could have been ready, she could have been married at 18.
Yeah. But I know that Harry went hunting with Joe.
Their hours are in here. They ought to be.
Well, actually, no. Mariah is now 81, 82, somewhere.
So she's 10 years different.
Yeah. Sadie's 8 years. I think she's there. From Harry.
Yeah. I think so.
So.
I think it was Mariah. No, David was oldest, wasn't it?
Tommy.
I mean, Tommy, then David. Yeah, Tommy's the oldest, period.
Yeah, and then David. That was David.
Yeah.
I think it's Tommy, David, Robert, Mariah, Kate, Sadie. Or Mariah, Sadie, Kate. I forget that part. Then Arnold.
I'm going to look.
I've never met Kate, so I don't know. I forget if she's older or younger than Sadie.
I've never met her either. So.
So I know that Harry went hunting with Joe.
Tom, David, Robert, Arnold, Harry, Jenny, Mariah, Sadie, Kate, Mary. Mary was the youngest. Then Kate, then Sadie.
No. Harry's younger than Sadie.
Not according to this. Harry was born in 24. Oh, yeah, Sadie's 16. Why did they do that? They don't have an order. Excuse me. Okay. I was just reading down the list.
I know, that's confusing. You'd think they'd be in order.
I thought they'd be in order, but they're not. Mary's 29. Okay. The next one would be Harry, 24. That's strange. Then, where's Sadie? No, then Kate is the next oldest.
After Harry. Oh.
Then Sadie.
What about Arnold?
Then Mariah. Oh. Yeah, Arnold comes way back in there.
He's somewhere.
Arnold, it's Mary, then Arnold. Wow, that's...
No.
Arnold was born in 1922.
Mary born in 29.
But Harry was born in 24. So Harry's in between.
Yeah, you're right. 22, yeah. Mary, Harry, Arnold.
Then Kate. Okay.
Then Sadie, then Mariah, Robert, and David. And Thomas. Kate Brower was an Unger. I'd forgotten that.
Tommy's wife. Yeah. Teresa Hobson's sister.
Yeah.
And Molly Ittas' sister.
Really? Holy cow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they were all three sisters.
Huh. I remember Nanny Woods and the Outkicks. They were sisters.
Which Greta
Outkick?
No.
Oh, God.
Was she Walter's sister? Nanny Woods, Walter Outkick's sister?
Something's wrong here. Wait a minute. Let me think. Nanny Woods. See if there's a Woods in here. I don't think so.
I never knew. I don't remember her name. I know Greta Upick was Tuva.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe Nanny Woods was Kenny's sister. No, that's not right.
Well, I think Upick sounds right. Like she was Walter Upick's sister.
Well, let's look at Optic.
But I can't remember.
That's cute. There's no Optic in here. Oh, she spelled it just AK. Oh, here's the second column. Okay. 359 to 367. It's a big group. Got to be in there somewhere because I'm positive she's an octave.
She is somehow related to families that are now Barrow families. I also still remember.
Yeah, Nanny Ockpick was Walter's sister. Okay. Walter, Simeon, Joseph, Nanny, Nellie, and Carrie were all the brothers and sisters. Okay. And Walter married Greta Tudock.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Oh, Nellie, yeah. Carrie is the one I was trying to think of. Kignak. It's Carrie Opkick. Kignak and Manny were sisters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And Carrie was, is that Ernest Kignak's wife?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. She and Manny were
all way
sisters.
Before my time.
God, you're very good. You're much better at this than I am. I have to go back and look it up. But I can remember Carrie and Manny and Thelma. Thelma Tuvok. They used to hang around together like three peas in a pod. Huh. You know, they were always joking and laughing.
I don't know what family Selma's from.
Have a look at the two. I think she's one of the unusual names, if I remember right. She sure was a poor woman. She had lots of troubles.
I would see her driving around.
Yeah, lots of troubles. Just one Stein, Abe Stein's girl.
Oh.
That's right.
So Dora Stein's sister.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it kind of looks like it.
Yeah.
Now that you mentioned it.
Yeah. Abe had his problems too, so I guess that's a reason. She literally went off the deep end a couple of times.
That's too bad.
Had to be sedated. Strain, and she was so addicted to tobacco.
Uh-huh.
She died of emphysema.
Oh, she did.
She had an attack on the way here to Anchorage. They were coming down. It was so bad, they had the ambulance meet the airplane and take her off.
Uh-huh.
And they took her from the plane to the hospital, and she sat up in the ambulance and had a cigarette.
No way.
Oh, yes.
They let her?
she wouldn't say of anything else. She was a very strong woman. Extremely heavy. You think Kenny's heavy. Thelma was really heavy.
Yeah, I've seen her.
Yeah. Well, she went up and down like a yo-yo. She was... I'm trying to remember the little thing. Oh. Was it James? No. It was Kenneth that died. She doesn't have the death in here.
Maybe it was after she did this.
Seven. That kid died in the 60s. Yeah. Oh, it's the first.
There are two.
No? There was another one. She doesn't have it in here. Yeah. It was the first Kenneth, I think. No, it's this Kenneth, because that's 58. He would have been about 9, 10 years old. Walking. Thelma was walking the kids down the beach from the village to the camp. Hot July day, which is rare,
yeah.
But it was quite hot. About the 8th or 9th of July. And he was playing with firecrackers, and he ran over and put one in an oil gun. And the vapors from the sun, it blew up and covered him in flames.
Oh, horrible.
He survived the burning. It's a horrible day. Max Brewer was out of town. He was in Fairbanks with Britton. They were working on the budget or some damn thing. I was up there alone. I managed to get a hold of the Dewline plane and turn it around. I'll never forget. I just told somebody on the Dewline, we're commandeering it. I'm chartering that thing. It's going south, you know. I put the kid on the Dewline. It was the only two engines we had. The Dewline plane was flying with that. Got him on that plane, flew him as far as Fairbanks, got a hold of Brewer, told him what had happened, that the plane was on its way down. He went, the guy, I can see him just plain as day, he was head of cargo in those days at Ween. It'll come to me. He went out and filled up an F-27 with whatever he had for cargo for Anchorage. They had no facilities in Fairbanks. They had like kind of a burn in those days. And they took him off the one plane and put him on the 27 and flew him down here to Anchorage.
Yeah.
And Kenny and Thelma were with him all the way. Susie stayed home to take care of the kids. And he lived, it was a good 3 weeks. He caught pneumonia.
Yeah.
And he had finally, they were healing, everything was coming. Died in the morning. I can still see Kenny coming in the door to tell me about it. It's horrible. But another time, I got trouble. I commandeered an Air Force contract airplane. No logic to this whatsoever. But in those days, you just did it. Because you had to. You had nothing else. So I just bluffed my way through. What else could I do? I remember afterwards, I thought, oh God, I'm going to be paying for this for the rest of my life, So what I immediately did was get a hold of, not immediately, but this was on a Tuesday or something. Wednesday or Thursday, I called our contracting officer and told him, he says, we'll cover it, don't worry, somehow, find a way. Get someone to write a letter to him saying it was search and rescue and I'll approve it, this type of thing. And I'll never forget that I got a hold of the freight guy. That'll come to me. Max would know it. See, I've depended on him for too many years for this. And anyway, I got a hold of him and told him, let's send the bill. And I think the bill was $25.
For cargo.
I don't remember what it was. But it was just absolutely ridiculous. That's the way Ween was in those days, too, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievably nice. They supported the Bush. People don't realize. I was very sorry to see Ween go, because the Bush hated them because they cost so much money.
Right.
which really wasn't true. They weren't making money, but they were doing the best they could. But they always supported the Bush. They did their damnedest to do what they thought was right for the people in the Bush. Simply because of the way wheat grew, you know. The Bush was their life.
Right.
I'm going to go over to Brewers tonight and say, how was so-and-so's name?
So good, and you'll have them all remembered by Saturday.
Oh, he's so good at that, yeah. It's funny, because when I first got to Barrow, all the names were new to me, you know, then. And I was there 4 or 5 years. They were beginning to get this repetition to Max. And he would say, who was up here in 19 such and such, you know? And what was their name? So, and I could list them, because it was all new, you know.
Right.
And then after a while, it just sort of repeats and reiterates. You know, and the same people come back year after year, and they mix and they meld, and you can't get it straight in your mind. So now I'm worse than he is. Well, let's call it quits.
Yeah. Unless you have anything else you want to say about Harry before we...
No, I'm thinking is, if you're going to be over at Max's or Max's office?
No, his house.
His house? Oh, well, then I'll just... give a call and see if you're still around or something.
Okay.
Because I'm usually tied up on a Saturday. My Erna does not drive, and that's her day to get her hair done and do other things. So I'm busy usually on Saturdays. But we'll see what happens.
Okay.
Try to get Mary Lou involved.
Okay.
In fact, I'll go over there tonight and sort of push on her a little.
Okay.
I see Max every day. We get together for an hour every day.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, not every day, but all 99%
that's
of the time.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'll let him know what we did, what you're doing. But Mary Lou has lots of good memories of Barrow, and Harry and Annie also. Because she spent... Well, they were married in Barrow.
Yeah.
In fact, let's see. If you're at the airport, and you leave the terminal, and walk parallel to the strip... That road, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the names of streets.
In Barrow?
Yeah.
I don't know the names of streets either.
Okay, so you're just walking and you're sort of paralleling the airport.
Right.
And you get down to the first major intersection, whatever that is.
So you're walking towards the ocean.
Yeah, it goes to the... Yeah.
Yeah.
You could turn right and go
over
towards the hotel and
the
ocean and that. All right, in that corner on your left, on the other side away from the, you know, whatever that is, the FAA tower or something.
Mm-hmm.
There's a... group of Quonsets.
Right, I know where they are.
The middle Quonset is the Quonset they were married in. It was from the hospital.
Ah.
It's still there.
Ah.
Yeah, well, it used to be the maintenance man's house. They were married in the maintenance man's house.
Huh. Interesting. Okay, so we've done?
Oh, yeah.